Hello, and welcome to the Blockchain.com podcast. My name is Nick Carey, co-founder and vice chairman of Blockchain.com. From the intrigue surrounding Satoshi Nakamoto to the rise and fall of Mt. Gox, Web3 innovation, and crypto regulation, crypto's journey to where we are today hasn't been straightforward. In our latest The Story Of segment of the Blockchain.com podcast, we'll chronicle the journey by speaking with some of the most influential people in the space, the entrepreneurs, the pioneers, advocates, and investors. In today's episode, we're going to be speaking with Bobby Yang, co-founder of CoinGecko, the world's largest independent cryptocurrency data aggregator, to talk a bit about the demand for crypto data, doing your own research, and all the popularity of crypto. So, Bobby, I've known you for a long time. It's a pleasure to have you on the Blockchain.com podcast. We have a little tradition around here, and the first question we always ask is, how did you earn your first buck, your first dollar, pound, euro, or currency? You know, when did you sort of learn the importance of money?
Yeah, I was studying in Singapore and I needed some extra cash, and I printed some t-shirts and started selling to my friends. And that was my original business, selling t-shirts to teenagers, I suppose, printing unique designs. And that was how I got my start. Learned some hard lessons from it as well. Realized the value of inventory. So I invested some money printing those t-shirts, and then not being able, I made a few mistakes. I printed too many large sizes, a lot of Asians being small size. So I have all those things as inventory. And that's when I realized like, okay, maybe I need to better plan and forecast inventory. Ideally, like even get to the digital business where there is no inventory at all. Everything's even better. And I guess that's kind of how I found myself in the tech sector, I suppose, specifically.
I love that.
Yeah.
So you started off as a fashion entrepreneur and then learned some valuable lessons about inventory management, product sizing, and more. And then you're like, well, if we go digital, we don't have to worry about having all this inventory. So I like that origin. That's a great story.
Inventory, warehousing, logistics, really, really painful stuff. Dealing with brick and mortar related stuff. All these things are not different sort of problems in the digital realm, but like don't have those kind of issues in the digital world.
Yeah, great lessons there. So from being an entrepreneurial tycoon in the fashion business to then going on to found a crypto company, you know, what was sort of your first moment learning about crypto, or, you know, how was your, when you go down the rabbit hole of your story, you know, when did you first become interested and what sort of made you interested in crypto in the first place?
Yeah, so I studied economics in UCL and graduated in 2012. And I spent, this was shortly after the global financial crisis of 2008. So throughout my university degree, I basically learned about bank runs and global financial crisis and basically everything on the traditional financial, how the traditional financial system works. Upon graduation in 2012, I was learning how to code and I spent a lot of time in Hacker News. It's a tech forum. And a lot of these people in the forum were talking about a new form of monetary system. And a lot of investors in Silicon Valley were interested in Bitcoin. And I thought I've known everything there is to know about money, having learned economics. But I felt like I was obsolete coming out of university because there's a group of guys talking about a new form of monetary system. And I thought, I can't be obsolete like right after uni. Like maybe when I'm 50, that's fine. But like I'm just fresh out of uni. I got to learn this thing. So I was really curious, fresh-eyed, I suppose. Said, there's no harm. What can I lose? So I read the Bitcoin white paper and kind of went down the rabbit hole, I suppose. I guess the big step that I took was instead of just reading the white paper, I decided to take action and purchase my first Bitcoin. And back then in 2013, it wasn't very easy to buy Bitcoin. I was back in Malaysia after that time. It wasn't the easiest thing. There was no Coinbase. There wasn't any exchange that was easy to purchase Bitcoin. I had to buy peer-to-peer. So I used this peer-to-peer marketplace called Local Bitcoins. And basically, it's like an eBay matching buyers and sellers of Bitcoin. And basically, there was some random seller online saying that, hey, I'm willing to sell this Bitcoin for this price. You know, if you agree to it, send the money to this random bank account. And I did that.
and pray and hope that the Bitcoin arrives in my wallet. Well, it did arrive. And when I moved the money to a self-custodial wallet, and I used blockchain.com as my first, one of my first self-custodial wallet. And that's when I knew that this money is self-sovereign money, is money that I hold and have full control of it without trusting any intermediary. And that's when I knew like this is kind of like the future of money. I think recent examples of the Silicon Valley Bank crashing is a good reminder of why we need self-sovereign money and why the importance of having full control of your money and not having any government or anybody of authority in power authority to seize this money if they so wish. So yeah, that's kind of where I realized the self-sovereign aspect is very important. The self-custodial aspect is very important. I also like the fact that Bitcoin had a cap of 21 million Bitcoin. This was on the backdrop of quantitative easing 2013 and so on. So governments were printing so much money that it just felt unsustainable to me. And I guess went down the rabbit hole, and before I knew it, I just got too deep into it and kind of stayed in this industry. Yeah.
And now 10 years later, here you are still. So one of the very few veterans that survived a decade. I like that background. You know, you talk about studying economics and then becoming interested in computer science. And a lot of people may not remember, but as you mentioned, Bitcoin was really sort of forged in the crucible of the great financial crisis. And Satoshi, who is the pseudonymous founder of Bitcoin, and to those that haven't gone out and done it yet, reading the original white paper is a fantastic place to start, because it outlines this sort of alternative financial system that includes a protocol for settlement and a new type of currency with some foundational elements and principles and properties that make it very unique and fit the purpose for the age of the internet. And like you said, just in the last 3 weeks, we're really watching Bitcoin emerge in the context of a totally new financial crisis. And so two of the largest banks in the United States have failed within 36 hours of each other. Silicon Valley Bank, Signature, First Republic is on its knees as well. We've seen capital flight from regional banks going into the systemically important financial institutions. The Fed has responded with a backstop again of over $300 billion. And this is all in the context of almost record levels of inflation. And so there's a lot of turmoil in the financial system in early 2023. And that's a really great reminder of why these alternative financial systems, you know, Bitcoin being the first one and now many others, why they're potentially so critical for enabling an always-on digital form of money on a peer-to-peer basis. And so it's funny that you mentioned localbitcoins.com. I mean, I think we have to tip our hat to those guys and the team that built that. They actually just after a decade have scuttled that project and sort of, I think, with the emergence of DeFi and all these other kind of options out there. But a lot of people got into the space using this sort of peer-to-peer brokerage model. And in the early days, that was certainly a very popular way for people to buy and sell crypto. So from buying your first crypto, and thank you for using a blockchain.com wallet, that means a lot to us. You know, what was your sort of your interest in you know, looking at the data side of on-chain analytics? And talk to us a little bit about the name CoinGecko and the business that you founded.
Yeah, sure. So I think coming back to Malaysia after my studies in the UK, and I having gone down this Bitcoin rabbit hole, I thought like, okay, I was too young to take advantage of the tech cycle, the bull run in tech sector 10, 20 years ago. But the Bitcoin crypto cycle could be an interesting opportunity for me, and it's something that I should try to seize and take full advantage of if I'm early in this cycle. I think the idea was anybody who wanted to start a tech company back then like had to relocate to Silicon Valley to stand a realistic chance of being successful. This was at the backdrop of 2013, 2014. If you're not in Silicon Valley, it's really hard to make it in the tech sector. And I just didn't really want to move to the Valley. And I was together with my co-founder TM, we were just brainstorming of ideas. What could we do that have a realistic chance of succeeding globally while still staying back where we are, back in Malaysia? And we toyed a few different ideas and realized that crypto data could be an interesting opportunity where
we could serve the global audience and without having to, you know, run an exchange and deal with all the AML, KYC, bank account issues, legal issues that we could face. And we thought we have, we look at what is happening in the traditional financial system and what is missing in crypto. And one of the things that was quite glaring in our eyes was that Yahoo Finance was quite a popular portfolio tracker for the traditional finance space. People use that to track their stock price, bonds, and so on. But we don't really have a good piece of software to track this in the crypto space. And I guess the thesis that we have was, if we believe that blockchain is going to take over the world, then we believe that anything that can be tokenized will be tokenized. We will be looking into the future where there will be millions of tokens and, in fact, billions of tokens. Cool. And people will get really confused and would like a place to kind of make sense of all these different tokens, like a one-stop shop, kind of like a Yahoo Finance, but for crypto. So with that thesis, we set out to build CoinGecko and try to build the best data tracker out there for the crypto space. And to how we get that to that name Gecko, I think a lot of people had very serious sounding names, but we thought that it could be fun to have like an animal as a mascot, but also produce a website, a product that has all this reliable data. It doesn't have to be a very serious sounding name. And I think it went pretty well, because if we look at all the DeFi ecosystem and all the meme tokens that have come out, like a gecko fits really well when it comes when we have Doge and Shiba and kimchi and all the different vegetable projects that have come out. So I think rhymes pretty well with the overall fun ecosystem, crypto ecosystem that we have these days.
Oh, good. I've always wanted to hear how you got to the name CoinGecko. So thanks for sharing that. So let's talk a little bit about how the platform has sort of changed. So you launched in 2014 as sort of a place with pricing and some kind of core metrics for each of the emerging digital assets. You know, what have you guys sort of added on? What have customers been asking for over the years? Talk to us a little bit about the product development in the past decade.
Yeah, so I think the initial version of CoinGecko wasn't very price focused. We wanted to kind of come up with like a different sort of way to rank cryptocurrencies. So we were looking at market cap, trading volume, developer stats on GitHub, and community stats on social media. And we tried to rank all these different currencies and gave a score to each of these coins. Eventually, we realized that was too complex for most people, and people just wanted to see coins based on market cap. And we kind of doubled down and changed the website and focus on market cap. And kind of we look around the competition and realized that it was really hard to try to see how do other places derive their market cap. So we thought that it would be useful to make the way we calculate market cap more transparent. So we kind of explore how we try to be as transparent as we can on based on what the teams disclose to us, basically like the total supply of token deduct against the treasury, investors, advisors, team tokens to kind of derive the circulating supply of tokens. Over the years as well, people want to have this information on the go. They don't just want to see the information on a website. They want to have this information on a mobile app. So we had to, it's very, I'd say, standard affair these days to have a mobile app, but it wasn't very common back in the days. So we had to build a mobile app and then trying to build a more robust portfolio. And that's something that we're not there yet. I think there's still a lot of areas where we can and should improve. And that's something that we would like to improve on over the years. I think a few other things that were really critical in the past few years was CoinGecko in the early iteration was built as an aggregator of centralized exchanges, meaning aggregate the prices of cryptocurrencies from exchanges such as Coinbase, Kraken, Binance wasn't around in the early days, Huobi was around at a bunch of different exchanges. But the DeFi summer of 2020 kind of changed the game. Suddenly, decentralized exchanges, which used to be very clunky and hard to use, became, with the launch of Uniswap, became very easy to use and became really popular. This kind of allowed for Cambrian explosion of
tokens to be created and for liquidity to be provided by an average Joe and a marketplace to be formed. Because CoinGecko was kind of crafted to expect an API response from an exchange, a centralized exchange, it wasn't very easy to get data from a decentralized exchange. We went around trying to talk to a decentralized exchange. Hey, do you guys have an API? And the common answer that it says, just read it from the blockchain. It's everything's on Ethereum. It's very easy for them to say, which is true. But for us, we don't have the infrastructure to read something on chain. So in the early days, we were the first data aggregator that sort of figured out how to read on-chain data. And we made use of subgraph, which provided the subgraphs for us to kind of index data from Uniswap, Curve, Balancer, and a bunch of different DEXs. That allowed us to add all these different chains onto different DEXs onto CoinGecko, supporting all these thousands of new DeFi tokens, and that kind of catapulted our popularity during the DeFi summer. I think following on from that development, we foresee DEXs becoming more and more popular. People will start trading more and more on DEXs, and we wanted greater sovereignty on how we index this data. So we started indexing data on-chain ourselves. So instead of relying on a third party like Graph, we started reading things, and that's kind of where Gecko Terminal came about. And now we read every single DEX trade for over 90 different blockchains, 480 different DEXs, and over a million tokens out there. Obviously, most are spam and scam, but like what is on the blockchain is indexed, and we want to make sense of all these things. So yeah, that's kind of like a short answer of how things have improved.
It's such
changed
a crypto
over the
story,
years.
Though. Like, you start off with the website, you build up a bit of a community, you know you have to get mobile, and then all of a sudden, everything you've been doing has to change because decentralized finance really gets hold of everything. And now we got to go ingest all this on-chain data. And so in a lot of ways, we've seen, and that's mirrored a lot of the experience we've had at blockchain.com too. So very cool to hear about all the progress, and definitely also about the gecko terminal.com. That's cool. So CoinGecko is very well known as well as sort of an educational resource. I know that oftentimes it's like one of the first places that new crypto curious community members might go. So what topic or topics do you see as being the biggest in demand for crypto education? And what do you see there?
Yeah, I think for us, I mean, we know we are kind of like the front page of crypto. A lot of people rely on us for information. I think there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of like bad advice out there. We want to help educate the new group, new bunch of users coming into the crypto space with the right resources. So I think we do a few different things. We have a daily newsletter that we've been compiling, sending out every day since 2015, I believe. We also have like coingecko.com/learn, where we kind of write some content on what's kind of trending in the crypto space. And this could be like what's kind of the best wallet in town. What are the new layer one blockchain? What does it mean? And the differences between the different chains, for example. I think some of the interesting things that we started doing as well, we started a YouTube channel for a lot of people to kind of stay in touch. For example, learn about things. And what we realize is a lot of people come into crypto with the idea or with the intention to make money. And some of these topics that I guess help people learn how to make full sense of the opportunities that crypto allow, some of the popular topics. I think airdrop articles, airdrop topics are very interesting topics. And I guess DeFi changed it all when they start distributing tokens via airdrops, and a lot of users are out there trying to search for ways how to make money via airdrops, for example.
Yep. Got it. So, free software tools offer lower barriers to entry than licensed software. So how important is it for you guys to make sure that CoinGecko stays free for as many people as possible?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a trade-off that we have to make. Do we kind of, get our software and start doing very intense detailed analytics for the crypto users, or do we kind of, keep it free, but then like find it challenging to monetize and have to, use things like advertising to sort of make money for the crypto for our company. I mean, we are a for-profit company after all, so we have to find ways to make money. I think that's just, I mean, if you look at the growth of the tech sector, I mean, like 20 years ago, like, who would have thought that everybody would be holding a supercomputer on their hand and you have 24/7 internet access and, you know, it's very easy to call, I mean, to call an Uber, for example. Our parents tell us don't go into a stranger's car, but here we are in this world, like, entering stranger's car every single day. Parents say
stranger's house on Airbnb.
Yeah.
it's changed a lot.
It's changed so much. And I think it's the same for crypto. Like, a lot of things will change in the next 10, 20 years. We want to be at the forefront to help educate and provide all this information. Because if not, then people will end up getting information from the wrong sources, for example, or might get scammed or fleeced. So we want to try to provide accurate data to as many people as we can for free. Obviously, we have to find a good balance and try to make money and monetize from other sources. We make money mainly via advertising at this point in time, but the sector that we are aggressively trying to grow is our API business. So our subscription business is all the data that is available on CoinGecko. We are monetizing it via API and selling to other businesses. And hopefully with that, then that allows us to keep most of the core services free for most users.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. So for cryptocurrency entrepreneurs out there that need access to market information, pricing information, educational resources, the data ingestion, CoinGecko offers those in the form of an API at cost and a great way to help scale businesses that are recently started. So we have this phrase, obviously, in crypto, which is not your keys, not your crypto. And I think you guys are sort of pioneering this sort of do your own research mantra, with CoinGecko being the sort of first experience many have discovering cryptocurrencies, digital assets. So when someone lands on the CoinGecko website for the first time, you know, what would you encourage them to do if they're sort of new to crypto in the first place? And, you know, you have everything from market cap to circulating supply. Some of these terms can be sort of intimidating to new users. What do you think are things they should be looking for? And how can they use your website in the CoinGecko platform to educate themselves and learn a little bit more about these different assets?
Yeah, I think anyone coming to CoinGecko would probably get overwhelmed with so much data available on the page. I think having a sense of what are the different cryptocurrencies being traded around on the homepage of CoinGecko would be a good start. For example, we display the top 100 cryptocurrencies by market cap. Just taking the time to read up on what are these currencies, what do they do, what are the differences between them would be pretty useful. So for example, we'll start with Bitcoin. So, you know, understanding what is Bitcoin and then going deeper into it, reading the Bitcoin white paper, for example. I mean, there's a lot of research to do, but I mean, that's kind of what is needed if you really want to go deep into the space. Goes on with Ethereum, and then we have Tether. What is Tether? I mean, stablecoin, and then understanding the different categories of stablecoins. So yeah, that's kind of what I would say is important. I mean, some people will find it useful to kind of just read some of the books that we have also published. We have a How to DeFi book, How to Bitcoin book, How to NFT book. Probably provides a good overview of the space. But I mean, things move really quickly in crypto. Every couple of years or every year, maybe something new comes up and things get outdated really fast. But I mean, the books kind of provide a good snapshot when we kind of wrote it at that point in time. And I would encourage users to kind of go deep and try to understand it and compare against it and always question how does this stack up against some of the major cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum.
Cool. So when you visit the CoinGecko website, you can click into different crypto projects. There'll be summaries. There's links to the founding documents or original white papers for these things. There's all kinds of educational resources as well. So thank you very much for sharing that. So obviously 2022 was a tough year for tech in general and then crypto as well. You know, 2023, if you're looking at January 1st really to today, you know, crypto is sort of having a very strong start. And I think it's always kind of hard to tell whether you're sort of in a bear market or in a bull market, and you don't really know for a while. But you know, already Bitcoin and Ethereum are sort of outperforming most other asset classes this year. And just last week, we hit the all-time high for Bitcoin in 2023. So what's your feeling? You've been in the business now for 10 years. You have a lot of access to information on the CoinGecko platform and on-chain analytics. You know, without being, you know, we're no one's going to hold you to the letter on this one, but give us a bit of perspective on, you know, what you think the rest of the year looks like and what should, you know, crypto community enthusiasts be paying attention to over the course of the year.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot, I do get these questions quite frequently. And I always like, I mean, I like to look back in the past and kind of compare how things go. But obviously, as they said, you know, past history is not a good predictor of the future. But I mean, and we only have like, I don't know, 12 years of history, 13 years of history in crypto. So maybe too early as well. So I think one of the things that has driven Bitcoin price in the past 10 years or so is that it sort of goes with respect to the Bitcoin halving cycle. So Bitcoin rewards half every 4 years and things are really volatile. And what we see is like huge booms and bust cycles. So we see like insane run up for 2 years and then a massive correction dump for the following 2 years. And then the cycles tend to repeat itself. What we have observed is 2020 and 2021 has been a massive bull cycle for crypto. 2022 has been a down market, down 70% on average for most cryptocurrencies. And I think 2023, if the past cycle follows, will probably be the same as well. Before the halving happens again next year in April 2024. So my guess is we'll probably see the crypto market improving maybe towards the end of the year and early next year, and then really take off after Bitcoin reward halves again next year. And if you look at a crypto, if you look at a macro cycle as well, I mean, interest rates have been increasing pretty significantly last year, this year. We'll probably reach a stage at some point where like the economy either goes to a soft or a hard landing, and then things will get really bad, and then the central bankers are forced to kind of cut interest rate and maybe start quantitative easing again. Maybe, and then markets are predicting sometime towards the end of the year, although inflation is kind of like a big unknown right now, whether inflation gets controlled. So far, it seems to be pointing out that like towards the end of the year, things will be improving. So from a macro point of view, and also from a Bitcoin point of view, crypto point of view, things are showing that things should improve towards the end of the year. Obviously, now we're just in March going to April. From now to the end of the year, a lot of things can happen. We've got, had a great start in Q1. Who knows what's going to happen in Q2, Q3. It can get pretty nasty before we start going up again. So I think that's one of the dangers, or I guess fun, the thrill being in crypto. And I guess the number one rule in crypto is to stay alive. Don't get liquidated. Be a cockroach.
Yeah, and understand, not your keys, not your crypto. Thank you, Bobby. That was, I think, a very thoughtful summary of, and I share many of those views. I mean, it's been a strong start. I think it's too early to tell. But one thing we know for sure is that in 2024, the circulation of Bitcoin will start to deteriorate because there'll be the halving, which is a moment every 4 years where the amount of Bitcoin that comes into circulation decreases by 50%. And because of supply and demand dynamics, this has always caused sort of a whole new cycle and opportunity for crypto community members and regular people to learn a little bit more about how this specific digital currency is so different than dollars, pounds, and euros. And so I'm quite encouraged by that. And it's one of the few things that we're very sure will happen. You know, the macro climate is very volatile today. But a lot of the things that are volatile in the macro world are things that cryptocurrency is directly trying to address by having an open, transparent ledger that anyone in the world can use, essentially as a financial utility, an always-on peer-to-peer electronic cash system that's totally decentralized. And in the era of the internet, that is becoming increasingly more useful. And I think it's pretty obvious to people that have had their bank wires frozen, their bank accounts shut down, or that are concerned about where to keep their wealth. It's a good conversation to have at home I know that that conversation is one that's happening in boardrooms for entrepreneurs and business owners around the world. When there's interest rates this high, just storing your money in a bank account over the next 5 years will cause your wealth to deteriorate by over 50%. And so it's important to have discussions about how to have a portfolio approach to wealth management, and certainly something worth researching. So you can do that research at coingecko.com/learn. And we really appreciate, Bobby, your time today and your sort of views, especially from the vantage of having been in this space for over 10 years. So thank you very much. And we hope everyone has a great week.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the blockchain.com podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please like and subscribe to the show. And if your friends and family are embarking on their crypto journey, why not share this episode with them? If you haven't already, visit blockchain.com to sign up for a free crypto wallet today. We've been around since 2011, and we're the world's most popular way to buy, sell, and trade crypto. See you next time.